All right, good morning, everybody. Thanks for showing up this early. I appreciate that. My name is Kurt Drapers. I'm a group program manager in the SQL Server team. I'm here with my colleague, Sarah McDivitt. So today, we're actually going to talk about SQL Server data tools. How many of you know what it is? How many of you played with Visual Studio Database projects? Cool, thank you. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about the work that we've done introducing SQL Server data tools inside SQL Server 2012. So in 2005, I actually started this project to build a set of developer tools for databases. At that point in time, this was inside the Visual Studio team that resulted in the Visual Studio database projects. And in 2009, we actually took the team and moved it over from Visual Studio into the SQL Server team. A couple of things changed as a result of that. First of all, it now ships with SQL Server. The other part, therefore, it's free, because it's like we have a different way of how we think about charging for tools. So it's part of the product now. So what we've done is when we took over database projects from the Visual Studio team, is that we looked at how do people actually work. And it's in the Visual Studio time frame, is we were really focused on the declarative model, how people can define the shape of their database in a declarative fashion, run it through the deployment pipeline, and go from there. That was the only thing we did. Now, it's a lot of you told us that it's well, we also need to have connected tools. We need to be able to do connected development. It's not an either-or situation. And if you want to be part of the Visual Studio way of working, it's you need to be able to support that. So we did a lot of work, actually, adding connected development scenarios and supporting them in a better way inside SQL Server data tools. Of course, it's the main world is our project-based development environment, allowing developers to specify what they want and deploy that in a way by defining us a blueprint, as we'll see. So that's our project-based development. And then it's about deployment. At the end of the day, we're trying to create this artifact that you build once and deploy many times. And we shouldn't have to care about what the targets are that you're deploying this against. So the way this is going to work is we're going to talk about these three pillars. Every time we're going to tee it up, there are some aspects that we're going to talk about. Then Sarah will actually go ahead and show you guys what this is about. And then we will wrap it up. So we'll have actually four sections that we're going to show you some pieces. Now, the key thing that we did when we started is a lot of people ask us, where is the equivalent of the Object Explorer inside SSMS? And so one of the things that we did, we added something called the SQL Server Object Explorer to Visual Studio. Now, if you're familiar with Visual Studio, you know Server Explorer. But Server Explorer had some intrinsic limitations. And it's getting the full SQL Server 3 in there didn't give us the right experience. So we actually added a full-blown experience into Visual Studio, together with the T-SQL editor that we actually renewed using IntelliSense. And we will see all these things pass by. So we've done a lot of work actually trying to optimize our connected environment. So the first thing that we'll do is I'll ask Sarah to introduce us to all the pieces that we have and take it from there.
Sure. All right, so we are here in Visual Studio 2010, and I have SQL Server data tools installed on top. So right here you can see that we have the SQL Server Object Explorer that Gert mentioned. So this is your central hub for all of your SQL Server development in VS now. The Server Explorer still exists, but you really want to live inside the SQL Server Object Explorer. And just like SSMS, you can navigate your databases. I'm going to use this DinnerNow database for our demo today. And you'll recognize this tree from SSMS Object Explorer directly. So one of the things we did here for connected development is brought the declarative development model from the database project into your online world. So if I look at the code for one of these objects in my live database, it's going to give me the definition of the object in a T-SQL editor window. And I actually can just work with this create statement. So if I want to make some change to this object, so I'm just going to remove some columns here from this view. I'm actually still working with the definition, and the tool is going to figure out the alter statement that needs to happen. Whoops. So we'll see some more complex changes about how this works, but right now we're just going to jump through this simple example. So I go ahead and click the update button to make this change in my live database. And this gives me a preview of what the tool has figured out needs to actually happen to make this definition look like I designed it. So I see that it's actually going to do an alter. And we can jump into that script that the tool is generating to actually execute against the database. So let's jump into that and see what we create. So this is the deployment script for my just simple change against the database. And we can see a couple interesting details here. So first of all, we're using SQL CMD syntax so that this script is actually agnostic. You can pass it around and change those variable values. So the script is a little bit more useful. We also check to make sure that SQL CMD mode is enabled so that you don't do any harm by executing this. And then you can see for the rest of the script, we're actually using those variables. Another thing to notice in here is that in the online update mode, we're doing this in a single transaction. So it's either going to succeed or we're going to roll the whole thing back. So if you have a large set of changes here, we're not going to get you into some partial state that's difficult to recover from. And then we see the actual goodies in the script. So the alter view is going to happen. And this is going to figure out the right order of things to execute if you have a large set of changes that are interdependent. And after we make that change, if there are no errors, we're going to go ahead and commit the transaction. So I can actually go ahead and execute from the editor here. And this would be just like if I had hit update directly from the preview window. So this completed successfully against the live database. OK, so let's get into a little bit more interesting changes. So another thing that we've done here is added a new table designer to SSDT that replaces the table designer that you saw from Server Explorer in 2010. So a couple things we've done here. I'm going to add some space. First of all, you can see that we have side-by-side design pane with your columns and the kind of most important details there. And then we also have a T-SQL pane. And these are going to stay completely in sync. So if I add just a column here, you can see that as I'm typing, it's actually updating the T-SQL code down below. And you could work either way. So I could change this down here in the code. And you can see that that's going to update the design pane. So these will always stay in sync. You can work whichever way you're most comfortable. And then the third thing here is over on the right here, we have what we call a context view. And basically, it gives you all the objects you need to know about as you design your table. So the indexes, keys, constraints, and also the triggers defined on your table. And as I navigate through these, I can actually see, if you can see the highlight color, the column that those are defined on. And vice versa. So I can actually see if I'm going to change this column, what objects I'm affecting. So as I'm looking at this, I see that I have a foreign key constraint, and my coworker that developed this database neglected to add indexes for my foreign key columns. So my first task is going to add an index for the restaurant ID column. And I can do this just right through here. And as soon as I give this a name and hit enter, it's actually given me a T-SQL stub down in my code pane that I can work with. So I don't really have to worry about syntax too much. Oh, thanks. So I don't have to worry about syntax too much as I define my objects. So I didn't tell it what column to define the index on yet. So it gave me just a column stub. And you can see that one of the things we're doing in the connected development environment is walking the whole database model. So we actually know if you have an unresolved reference or anything that's invalid in your database model. So now I can refer to restaurant ID here. and that will resolve the index. Okay, so I'm thinking that since that index wasn't there, my colleague probably didn't do that for all my foreign key constraints. So I actually want to go check that. So just like SSMS, I can query against the database and get the full T-SQL editing experience here. So I have a query in my toolbox. And I'm just going to check for any foreign key constraints that don't have indexes on that column. And I can execute and get my results. So sure enough, I have a bunch of foreign key constraints that are unindexed, and I want to rectify that situation. So I have another affordance here on the database that is new object, and this is new with SSDT. So this opens up a T-SQL editor with some slight differences, and basically this editor is specifically for your declarative design time development of your objects. So if I create objects through the object editor, this is telling the tool that it should walk the database model and let me know if any of these objects conflict with anything else or if I have any schema issues if I try to make this change. And in this editor, you can see the toolbar is pretty simple, but you do actually have all the querying capability that you need if you want to work that way within this editor. Okay, so at this point I have a set of pending changes in two separate design windows, and these have not yet been pushed to the database. So again, I'm going to click the update button, but this time it's actually taking all the pending changes I have in any design editor going to that same database, and it's going to put those together into a single update. So if in your design windows you have things that conflict, it will actually be able to tell you this. So a couple categories here. We have a highlights category. Right now we don't have any highlights, but this will give you warnings about data loss and things of that nature. And then we have all the things that the tool needs to do to the database and any supporting actions, so if we need to refresh a function or something like that. So database changes often have rippling effects, so we'll take care of that as well. Okay, so I'm just going to go ahead and update the database since we already looked at the script. And while this is going on, you can see it popped me into this new tool window called the Data Tools Operations window. And basically, we put any potentially long-running operation down into this tool window so that you can do other things in Visual Studio while it's going on and always flip back to monitor its progress. So that's one reason we pop it in here. The second reason is that we have these artifacts that are created during your update or publish. And so you can always go back to view these by clicking on these links. So if I go back to Server Explorer, this has now updated my database, so I could see that I have indexes defined on my table. So the update worked. Well, now you can see that. So that's just a quick walk through the connected development experience, and I'll hand it back.
Can you hit the right button?
Yes, I can.
One and then. All right, perfect. Thank you. So what you've seen actually is how we leverage the object browser technology to marry it with actually a piece of technology that we built called the declarative model. So what happens under the cover is, like, as soon as you actually connect to your database, we hydrate a model representation just like you would if you would create a project. And this allows us to actually do all the interesting things, like figuring out what your dependencies are, turning in red squiggles inside a designer to say, like, hey, this column actually doesn't exist. Or if you're going to do things that will have ripple effects, to figure out is like what the right order is. So we'll talk about T-SQL debugging later. It's like when we will actually show this in the next part. We also added a piece to work on data, so it's like you can view and edit some data. And one of the other things that the browser does, it actually it goes in the background to detect if the database that you're pointed to has actually changed. Schema comparison we'll actually see in the next one too. So let's switch gears and move on to a maybe more familiar part, where it's like we're going to talk about project-based development. So the premises of our project-based development has been and still is that we're trying to integrate database development into the world of application lifecycle management. Before this, it's like when we started this project in 2005, we actually went around, talked to roughly 200 companies, and did some surveys, and figured out that it's like genuinely there was one big problem between all the 20 or the 200 companies that we talked to. There was one thing that they all cared about that they didn't have an answer for. If we asked them, is like, where is the source of the truth for your database? And 99% of them pointed to the machine that was their production server and said, that's the only place where we know the truth lives. We make changes there live. We don't have an intentional version control system. Some of them did some versioning of their scripts. And the other thing that was very typical is that the way that they went from version to version to version is that they were crafting these Delta scripts to go from version 1 to version 2. And we actually did the same thing in SQL Server. I joined the SQL Server team in 1996 working on 7.0. And it's like, I remember Service Pack 4 for SQL Server 2000 took 45 minutes to install. And the reason wasn't that copying files was that bad, but it's like we actually had to run the install script for MSDB from MSDB RTM to versions Service Pack 1, Service Pack 2, Service Pack 3, Service Pack 4. There was a lot of repetitive work in there, and there was actually a lot of flawed code in there to be able to detect the changes. So that actually made us go to this design, whereas like we want developers to be able to specify what they want in the source code format, be able to compile that, give you the offline validation of a compiler. So you find problems that you would normally hit at runtime. So we do a full graph analysis of the SQL, even though it's stored in a bunch of .SQL files on your disk when we're actually compiling this. And what we can do with that is tell you things that would normally show up at runtime, for example, in stored procedures, which are deferred name resolved. We do this by putting your artifacts into source code files hosted inside a project system, and then we'll take it from there. So, Sarah, why don't you show us what we have?
Okay. How did you switch this to here?
Oh, just push 2 again, and then, yeah.
Okay. It's a little easier. All right. Here we are. So, of course, to start out your project development, you can always go File, New Project. And under the SQL Server category, you see we have a single database project type that will actually target SQL Server 2005 and up. So 2008, 2008 R2, 2012, and Azure. Now, I know that I want to create this project with the definition of the database I'm working on. So there's an easier way. I can actually just go to SQL Server Object Explorer, right-click on my database, and say Create New Project. And I'm just going to call this Dinner Now. And I want to add this to Source Control. I have a couple other objects here. Can't actually get to the bottom. There we go. So I can actually choose what types of objects I want to import into my database project. And I can also choose the folder structure here as well. So I hit start, I promise. And what this is doing, there we go, is shredding our database model into a set of source code files in my database. And again, this project is going to build up the same database model that it built in memory online, so I'll get the same tools offline as well. So I'll finish the import, and now we can look at my project. So I have a set of source code files. We've flattened out the folder structure a little bit from what you're used to in the Visual Studio 2010 database projects. We've also reduced the number of files that you get by default. So all those indexes, instead of creating an individual file for each one, we actually put them in the parent table file. So so one thing that I want to do with my project is record a baseline state. So since I just imported from the database, I know this is in a happy state. And so I could just check this in and label this my baseline. But that's more of a file perspective way, and I really want a more useful database-centric way of recording my versions. So we've added this feature called Snapshot. And if I click that, it's going to build the project, and it produces this file called a DACPack. So the file extension is DACPack. This is actually the output format of the underlying engine, the DAC framework, that is responsible for all of our build and deploy actions in SSDT. So I'm going to label this my baseline. And we'll see a couple ways this DACPack can be used, but it's really useful as a single file representation of my database model. So I can use it in schema compare. So for example, if I compared this back to the database I just imported from, we'd see that it's exactly the same. So we'll actually look at schema compare when it's a little bit more interesting, when we have changes. So now that I have a baseline version, I'm going to check all this in. And that'll just take a second. And then we'll get into some more complex changes in the project. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is open up the same table designer on my orders table. And again, we get the same tools online and offline. So this gives me the side-by-side code and design view. And a couple more things offered in the project. Language services for T-SQL brought up to the level of other languages. So we get refactoring operations here. And if I go ahead and do a refactor rename, and we'll just call this zip code, I can preview the changes through all my source code files in my project, apply the changes, and now I have this refactor log in my project. So this has added an entry for my column rename. So if I deploy this back to my original database, it recognizes it's a rename as opposed to a drop and create. So my data is preserved. Okay, so the changes I want to do in my project are to actually add a status tracking mechanism for my orders. So I'm going to add a status column. And this updates the code below. But what I really want to do is create an enum system so that we have a well-defined way of tracking our status. But a coworker's actually defined this for me. So he's put this in a SQL script, and my job is to incorporate this into the project. So I'm going to use import script. It's annoying. And I'm going to grab my enums.sql file that my coworker passed over to me. How do I lock that? There we go. Okay, so this is going to do the same thing as my import did. It basically takes the SQL file, shreds it into my source code files, and allows me to include the object definitions in my project. So now I have this enums table. I also see that I have some functions added. I got a stored procedure. And we're now able to make use of these objects. So I'm going to add a column for my toolbox that makes use of the enum system. And this is just using a function that my coworker gave to me. And we're also going to add a check constraint. Okay, so I've added this column and this check constraint. What I really want to know is what the heck these functions do. So I can actually use go to definition from the code pane, and this will pop open that function script. So I can see that. I can also, while I'm working on this enums table, look at all the places where this enums table is referenced in my project by using find all references. And this gives me a list that I can navigate through of all the references in my project. So this is one way of navigating your project schema. Those of you that are familiar with the Visual Studio 2010 database projects know there was another way, which was called schema view. which was basically a tree view, just like the Object Explorer, of your project schema. So when we released SSDT, we did not include schema view, but we've heard from you it's very useful. So we've brought it back. And if we go back to SQL Server Object Explorer here, there's a projects node. And this will give you the schema view that you're used to from the database projects. So this is navigating through the offline schema defined in my project. So the way we've added this back to SSDT, just to break from the enum system for a second, is by a power tool in VS. And so not only are we releasing more frequently on the web with all of SSDT, but we're also adding power tool functionality almost monthly. And another thing that's added is the script as tasks that you're used to in SSMS. This has been added by the power tool as well. So let me just show you where you can go get that. If you go to the VS Extension Manager and search in the online gallery for SSDT Power Tools, you can install it right from there. So as we release new versions of the power tools, we're basically just adding small little sets of functionality in there. Some of them make it all the way into the release product, some don't. But we always blog about what we're adding, so you can check out our team website, and you'll get notified when a new version is there. So that's the power tools. Now let's get back to our enum system. Okay, so at this point, I have my enum system in my project, but what I want to do is verify that the system works in a live database. But I don't want to push this all the way to the database I started with yet. I want to verify and debug first. So we use a paradigm in VS that you're familiar with, F5, which is basically just going to build and deploy my project locally and then allow me to debug. So I'm going to kick that off. Now, where is this deploying to? I didn't set anything up. By default, we're using local database runtime that shipped with SQL Server 2012. And it's basically just a file-based local sandbox that I can work with without messing up anyone else's server database. So if I look in SQL Server Object Explorer, I have this local DB connection. My DinnerNow project has been deployed. And so here I see my enums table is here. But an enums table is a little bit useless without data in it. I need my lookup data. So where does that come from? My coworker included that in the file that I imported. But as we shred that file into object definitions, we didn't quite know what to do with it. So we left it in a script that's creatively called scripts ignored on import. And if I crack that open, this actually has all the data that my coworker gave me. So he's using the stored procedure to insert all this data. Now, it's common to have data in your project that you want deployed with any schema deployment, right? So lookup data, seed data, you want that deployed with your schema. So the way we'll do that is adding a post-deployment script. So I'm going to go add script, post-deploy. And then I'm just going to copy all of this data into my post-deployment script. So the way you know that a script is post-deploy or pre-deployment as well is by checking the properties on the file and seeing that the build action is set to post-deploy. So this time, when I F5 my project, it's again doing a build and deploy to LocalDB. But this time it actually doesn't have any schema deployment to do because it recognizes the schema is the same. But it will execute my post-deployment script. So now if I go through SQL Server Object Explorer, and I might have to refresh this, and view the data on my enums table. Nope. I now have all my lookup data there. So anytime I now deploy this project, my post-deployment script will run and insert that data. So while we're in the data grid, I'm just going to point out a couple features here. This grid supports copy and paste, either in or out of the grid, so I can copy this data and take it somewhere else. I can also copy from Excel or Word or a table in an email or however your team manages data and paste it right into this grid. Another thing I can do is on the toolbar here I have two script options. And this will just give me the insert statements for all this data. So if I wanted to execute the same data and insert it into a different database, I could just change the connection here in the T-SQL editor and execute it. Okay, so now I have data in my lookup table. I have my project deployed to my local sandbox. And the next thing I want to do is actually debug my enum system and make sure that it does what I expect. So I want to look at the stored procedure that my coworker gave me that sets the enum. So I can view code on the stored procedure. This gives me the definition. And this procedure is very basic. It's just checking some input parameters, checking if that exists. If it does exist, making sure the value is updated. And if it does not exist, it's inserting that row. So in my local DB sandbox database, I'm going to set a breakpoint in the editor and then actually debug through the stored procedure. So I have a context menu option that's new here, debug procedure. And basically what this does, I can input my my input parameters. That I'm going to test with. And then this sets me up in a T-SQL editor with the debugger in VS started. And the real estate on the screen is a little bit tough, but you can see that it set me up with a little T-SQL snippet so that I can actually repeat the debugging process. So I'm already in debugging. I'm going to step into, well, actually, I'm just going to continue, and that'll hit the breakpoint in my stored procedure. So one of the big things about debugging on SQL Server, of course, is privileges. So without having sysadmin privileges, you're sort of blocked. So this way with LocalDB, you can go ahead and debug and test your project without having to worry about that. So you're in an isolated sandbox environment. You have all the windows in the debugger that you need in VS, so I have my locals here. And if I step through this, I can see it's checking if it exists. It doesn't, so it's going to insert my values. So now I can check if that actually worked. And here's my value entered in my enum table. So now I want to repeat this and make sure that the stored procedure works when the value is already there. So like I mentioned, I can just repeat this with the T-SQL that the tool generated for me by executing with debugger in the T-SQL editor. Starts the same experience. If I continue through, it hits the breakpoint. And to check that this will actually update, I'm going to change this value. And step into the procedure. The name and item does exist, so it's going to update my value. And then again, we can check this data and see that it updated correctly. Okay, so now I've verified my simple stored procedure, my simple enum system. I feel like my project is in a good place. I've done my development work that I was tasked to do. So I'm going to go back to my project. So now that I'm in a good state with my enum system, I actually want to take another snapshot. So if I use snapshot project again, you can start to see how these DAC packs are useful for versioning. So this pops the DAC pack file into my project, and I'm going to rename this V2. So now I have a baseline DAC pack, and I have a V2 DAC pack. And these can be checked into source control, but I also mentioned I can schema compare these. So now we have a set of changes that I've made, and before I actually publish that out to my original database, I want to just visualize my changes I've made, double check. So I'm going to launch Schema Compare from the DAC pack. I'm using V2 as my source and looking at the baseline DAC pack as my target. And in my project folder, this shows up in the snapshots folder. And here's my baseline. So as I click compare, this is going to demonstrate the changes that would be made if I was to deploy my V2 back to my original database, which is represented by the baseline DAC pack. So you can see the new schema compare here. We put as much as possible down in the code diff windows so that you can see at a really detailed level the changes that have been made. And you can also see we, by default, group this by action. We think this is kind of the cleanest way to visualize the changes that are going to be made. But you do have options here, so you can group this by schema or by object type, however you want to visualize the changes. So a couple of other things about schema compare. We have an options dialog here. And if you were targeting a database to actually update, you have all the deployment options that you need here in schema compare. So these are all the deployment options in the underlying engine that are surfaced up through schema compare. You also have this tab called object types. So you can actually exclude whole sets of object types from your comparison. So an example when this is useful is if you have users and logins managed in your project, but you don't actually want to deploy logins with your publish because you don't want to overwrite any logins that have changed on the server, you can actually just exclude users and logins from schema compare, and therefore it will not make that update. So that's one example where that's useful. But you can set up those exclusions and those deployment properties in schema compare and then actually save this off as a schema comparison file. So it's this SCMP file extension. So for example, if you do the same update frequently, you can just launch that from the schema comparison file. You don't have to set up the deployment options and the object exclusions, source and target every time. So that becomes a pretty efficient way of working. Okay, so we're just using this to visualize. So I can see that I've changed my orders table. I have a bunch of added objects. And it looks like I've done the right thing. So at this point, I want to take my project and publish it back to my original database to officially make these changes. So we've seen the F5 workflow, which is your quick iterative development loop with your local sandbox. Now we're going to use publish, which is just like web publishing, so I can take my single database project and publish it out to multiple environments as much as I want. So I'm going to enter my connection information back to my original database. And we have a couple other options here. First of all, you have all the deployment options, again, that are surfaced from the engine. And you also have this option to add profile to project. We're actually updating this UI a little bit, but basically what this does is we introduced publish profiles that record all of this connection information and all your deployment options. So just like the schema comparison file, you can save off this publish profile and launch publish from that file. So if you're always publishing to the same three environments, you can have three different publish profiles, and you don't have to worry about making sure your deployment options are set up correctly each time. So I'm going to add the profile to the project just so we can see that, and then go ahead and publish. So again, this is going to send me down to the Data Tools Operations window. And that was actually pretty quick, but you can imagine with a large database, this publish might take a while. And so you can monitor it there. So if I go back to my original database and refresh it, I can ensure that my enums table is there. And also, since I added that data via the post-deployment script, that was also executed on my publish, so my lookup data is also there. So that's basically project-based development, and I will hand it back to Gert. Yes? Yes, that's a great point. So the data that I added through debugging, I added only directly to my LocalDB sandbox instance. And what this deployed was my post-deployment script. So that data didn't come back into my post-deployment script, which is actually what I want, right? Because in my local sandbox, I want to be able to test with ad hoc data, but have my official data for my lookup table well-defined in my source code. You could use like the script to query window and copy and paste it back to the post-deployment script, but you are sort of left on your own to develop that post-deployment script.
All right, great. So what we've seen is that how we actually leverage the underlying engine, feed it from source code. All right, so what we do is we take your definitions in the form of create statements that you store inside source code files. So now they're plain source code files which can participate in source code control. This source code control can be anything. If you want to use GitHub, if you want to use Mercurial, or you want to use PVCS or TFS, it doesn't matter. Anything that has a source code provider that plugs into Visual Studio works with the system. So that allows you to actually version those artifacts in the regular way, in the same fashion that you version your application artifacts, your source code files from there. What you've also seen is how we leverage LocalDB. LocalDB is this instance of SQL Server that we introduced with 2012, which actually is very interesting. So it's a SQL Server instance, but it runs under the control of, in this case, the development environment. So you don't have to worry that it keeps running while you're gone. It's like that it's not there. It will start up with your development environment, and it will go with your development environment. And the reason why we're using that is to provide you with true isolation. What you saw Sarah do is like test this stored procedure. This requires sysadmin privileges, right? We couldn't change that. That's still true in SQL Server. There are reasons for that. That's a different discussion. But we allow you to actually do that in the context of your development workstation because the local instance in this case allows the developer to run with the right privileges. So that allows them to take an F5 debugging loop very iteratively on their own machine, testing through the changes, preparing packages for deployments that we then can hand off. Everything you saw her do in terms of project compilation can be done through MS Build. So if you have a build server, if you have a command line build environment, you can do the same thing from an MS Build environment. And we'll actually see later that we also have a command line tool set that allows you to take the artifacts of the build process, the deck packs, and move them around through a set of command line tools or even APIs. So the key thing is that the project system is declarative. So we're building up this model. This allows us to come up with an incremental deployment. So what we're doing is like our world gravitates around comparing your source state and your target state. We do this in the context of dependencies. We figure out it's like the cross dependencies that you have. If you have 3-part, 4-part names, it's like these will be pulled into the same context and we will try to resolve those contexts. We support every SQL Server version up to 2005. So even though this tool ships with SQL Server 2012, you're eligible to use this if you have 2005 or up. You don't need a paid version. If you have Express or up, you can start using this and you can download this tool actually from the web. We saw that it's like we can deploy in 3 different ways. We can compile it into a deck pack and take that deck pack and hand it off. That's our single file format artifact. We can connect to a server over TDS. So if we're deploying, it's nothing else than a deployment over TDS. Or we can produce the SQL script for you, either because you want to inspect what we're doing or that's what you want to use. But you have to be careful there because that encodes the state of the deployment in time. So let's actually see how we can leverage our deployment engine to do some retargeting.
Okay, so now I want to take this project and deploy it to the cloud. So I'm going to use the same project that I've been using and go into the project properties. And I have this target platform property. So I've been targeting SQL Server 2012. And if I just change this to SQL Azure, this is now going to use the SQL Azure engine to validate my project. So this is going to give me any errors offline that I will find trying to deploy this project to the cloud. So that way I don't actually have to go to the cloud yet to give that try to see what's going to happen. So if I build my project, I have some failures. So I have a sequence object that's not supported in SQL Azure. And I have some tables with that need clustered indexes. So I can navigate to these errors. I actually just don't even need the sequence. This was left over. So I'm just going to delete it. And then I can navigate to my indexes and fix these up. So as soon as I've made these changes, I can check my error list, and I can be pretty confident that this project will successfully deploy to SQL Azure, of course, depending on the connection. So I'm going to, again, use publish. So I can enter my Azure connection information, which is always pretty cryptic, so I'm going to copy it here. And enter my credential information. And again, since I'm never going to remember that Azure server name, I can add this profile to my project if this is a target that I'm frequently using. So I'm going to go ahead and hit publish. And especially with a large database, especially deploying to SQL Azure, this could be a potentially long-running operation. So again, you see where the Data Tools Operations window is useful. And as this progresses through the operation, I can pop open any of these artifacts that are produced. So the preview is going to give me that summary shot, warnings about data loss, the actions that the tool is going to take. And now we see one difference between this publish and the last publish that we did, which was to an on-premise SQL Server. In that I have two scripts created. So for SQL Azure, I have this master script created because it actually doesn't support the use statement. So I have to create my database first using master and then go ahead and do my database script. And again, you can view either of these scripts. You can use these. You can save these, whatever you need to do. So this actually successfully deployed to Azure, which is always lucky during demos. And now in SQL Object Explorer, I have my Azure database right here. So this is a good example looking in SQL Server Object Explorer that I have my local DB sandbox, I have an on-premise SQL Server, I have a SQL Azure database, and I have my project schema. So this is why we really put you in SQL Server Object Explorer as your hub for all of your development tasks. So I have my DinnerNow database. And you can see just as I navigate through this, there's obviously some lag time developing with SQL Azure. And so this is, as Gert pointed out, where LocalDB is really useful. So I can actually do all my development locally without having to worry about this connection and just work in Azure when I need to. So there we go. There's multi-targeting in the cloud.
Perfect. There it is. All right, so what you've seen actually is one of the capabilities that the underlying engine has. Thank you. One of the capabilities that our engine has is the ability to multi-target. So what we've seen is normally you're used to be able to deploy upwards. So if you developed something for 2005, you normally would be able to take that and deploy that to 2008 because SQL Server has always been pretty nice to you regarding to upwards or compatibility. All right, so 2008 was backwards compatible to 2005 and so forth. But Azure actually is a different beast. All right, it's like certain functionalities are there, certain are not there. So you want to be able to know is like how you can retarget this and do all your detection and changes in an offline fashion. So that's actually what Sarah was trying to show you. Now, the way that we publish this is through, as I said this earlier, through this DAC API, or this DAC pack, which is a central format that we standardized on. So it's like, if you worked with DAC packs before, these are not the same. As of 2012, we actually updated all the consumers and producers of DAC pack to the latest version, version 3.0. And it's a single file format that allows us to transport databases and data, actually, between the various participants, being on-premise databases, Azure databases. If you have Azure or SQL Server hosted inside a VM, as you saw in the keynote, if you're doing this for Management Studio from a management point of view, or as from a development point of view, or if you're actually using the Azure Management Portal. So this Friday, actually, the last session of the conference, there will be a session devoted completely to DAC and the underpinnings of DAC that Adam Mahut is giving, a colleague of us. So if you're interested in that, it's like I would highly encourage you to go to that, even though it's the last one of the conference. I'm sorry. So now with that engine in place, we actually allow you to do a lot of things at a much lower level. So as most of you is like are trying to gain efficiencies by automating things, it's like having a command line interface is really important. So Sarah, why don't we look at like how what we can do from the command line?
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to get out of the IDE for a moment and get into the command line. So the command line tool that ships with DAC framework and that you'll automatically get with SQL Server data tools is called sqlpackage.exe. So if I just run this to see what we have supported here, the first line is really what we're going to focus on today. So the actions that are supported through the command line today. And these are actually being updated as well. So you'll continue to get more functionality via the command line. But right now, we have extract supported. And this will extract a DAC pack from a live database. So just like we could build a DAC pack by snapshotting a project, this is basically the same thing from a live database. So this will give me a DAC pack I can use from a database. Deploy report. So whenever we updated a database or published, we saw an update preview dialog that gave you the summary of what's going to happen. That's what's called the deploy report in the command line utility. So you can enter your source and target. It could be DAC pack to a live database, for example, and see the deploy report of what would happen if you went ahead and did that deployment. Drift report, this is for registering DACs. We didn't go into that today, but Adam will go into that in the session tomorrow if you're interested. And then publish. So this is the same thing as project publishing, but it's taking a DAC pack artifact and publishing to a database. And finally, script. So again, each time that we had an update to make to a database, we could always generate the script without actually making the update, and this will do the same thing. Okay, so we can see some examples of this. Let's start with extract. So I'm using some text files so I don't have to type too much and make too many mistakes. So we're doing the extract first. This is going to take the DinnerNow database that we've been working with and build a DAC pack. So I just defined my output file, and we can go ahead and execute that. From the command line. So I hit enter. It gives you some of the status of what's going on. So it's extracting the schema from the database. And if I look at my demo folder, as this connects and builds the DAC pack, you can see this just popped right into my output folder. So this DAC pack can be used in all the ways that Gert mentioned. It's the same artifact that's built from the project. You could use this to import into a project. You can hand this around on your team if someone else is actually doing deployment. And of course, you can use it in schema compare as well. You can create a project from it, yes. Okay, so what I'm going to do in the command line today is actually take that baseline package that we created when we first had our project, and I want to roll my database back. So my boss didn't like my enum system, and I need to roll back my database to the baseline. So first, I want to make sure that this is going to happen how I want it to happen. So I'm going to look at the deploy report. So this is basically doing a diff without actually updating the target. And what I want to use is this source file that's directly from my project snapshot, that baseline that we created earlier. And this is going to do the comparison against my DinnerNow database, but actually just give me a deploy report. So let's see what that looks like. So it's taking the model represented in that baseline DAC pack, building up a model of my DinnerNow database, and doing the comparison. So it gives me warnings on the command line, but for the full report, I'm going to look at my output folder, and it gives me the deploy report in XML. So this is actually the file that's generated in the tool that we pop that dialog from. So you can see we have the warnings up here. I'm dropping the status column that I created. You can see I'm dropping quite a few other things that I had just added in my project. And so you can see this this summary. So finally, before I actually do this publish to roll back to my baseline, I want to check out this script also. So this is using the action script. Source is that same baseline DAC pack. Target is my DinnerNow database. So this is basically repeating the comparison, but giving me the update script. So for example, I might not be the one to actually execute this operation, but I can generate the script and hand it off to someone who will do that. So this is generating the publish script for the baseline to my DinnerNow database. And here it is. So I'm going to drag that into Visual Studio so we can look at that. So this is the exact same deployment script that's generated using the tool, but using the command line utility. So I could execute this right now, and that would actually do the rollback to my baseline DAC pack. But I want to do that via the command line as well. So finally, we're going to look at publish. So this is using the action called publish, and this is also applying two properties to my publish action. So some of these actions do have properties that you can dive into using help from the command line. And the two options that I'm using are, one, to drop objects not in source. I'm setting that to true. So by default, we're going to be conservative with our with what we set in the command line utility so that you don't make mistakes without knowing what's going on. So I'm going to override that and set it to true because I actually do want to drop my enum system from the target database. And we also, by default, block deployment on potential data loss. Again, just being conservative with the defaults. So I'm going to override that. I'm taking my baseline DAC pack and deploying it to my DinnerNow database. So again, this is all about the DAC packs being a way to version your databases. I created this from the project, but I can use it in any of the tools across the SQL Server stack. So this is now taking the baseline DAC pack, building it up, doing the schema comparison, and deploying the changes. So you can see everything that happened here. It dropped everything that all the work I just did. And so now if we go back to SSDT and look at this in SQL Server Object Explorer, I can see that my enums table is gone.
Whoa.
A lot of things are gone. And my start procedure is also gone. Interesting. So anyway, so you can see how the command line utility becomes very useful. And we're also adding quite a few things to that coming up. So for example, Gert mentioned that the artifacts of DACFX support data as well. We didn't go into that today, but DACPacks will support extracting schema and data together and deploying schema and data together as well.
All right. Thank you. All right. So we actually went full circle. As Sarah showed, it's like what we did is like we took a database, started working on it from a connected experience, pulled it into a project system so we can actually make some bigger changes, allowed us to work in isolation. So the key thing here is like that what we're trying to do is trying to allow you to make changes and validate changes locally in isolation. Share that with your team members through source code control and providing you the insight in your schema by being able to navigate through the artifacts, by being able to navigate and sees like what references what, or go to the definitions of objects, etc. All of this build is built on a single infrastructure. The DAC infrastructure that sits underneath here provides you with all these core capabilities in terms of being declarative, allows you to multi-target the different versions of your SQL servers, and deliver that through some standard formats, either being SQL script, you can over go through a connection, or through a DACPack, actually. So that said, it's like today you can go and get this. It's, as I said earlier, it's a free tool. It's available for everybody that has a SQL Server 2005 or later SQL Server. You can simply go online and get it. If you don't have Visual Studio, don't worry. We will install the integrated shell for you. If you already have Visual Studio 2010, we will just add it to it. It's a 5.4 megabyte addition to your existing SQL Server installation. For those of you who are actually living on the edge and are using Visual Studio 2012, you will find it is part of every Visual Studio 2012 installation, professional and up. It's already there. Once this Visual Studio 2012 release has shipped, these two products will ship at the same time and update both versions at the same time, so we will be in lockstep from then on. So you can actually interchange the project system and the artifacts between the two environments. Right, that's one of the characteristics actually of Visual Studio 2012. We actually have a blog where we post all the announcements, things like our power tools, as Sarah said, is like we're constantly adding functionality to the tool, either to power tools or to frequent updates. As I said, it's like we're a web-delivered tool, so that allows us to actually update more frequently. And the reason for that is very simple. SQL Azure is a product that evolves pretty rapidly, much faster than our Box product. So in order to keep up with all the SQL Azure changes, every time there are changes in SQL Azure and they're adding functionality, we'll update the tools to actually support that. And therefore, it's actually, that's why we are delivering this online. If you have questions, there is an MSDN forum where the team is hanging out and is answering your questions. So you will see the same names. You will see Sarah show up there. You will see Adam. You will see my name show up there, trying to answer the questions that you have. And if you want to read this yourselves, like there's actually a colleague, one of the developers, Jamie Laughlin and Barclay Hill, they wrote a great article for MSDN Magazine, sort of describing what we are doing and how this actually works and how you can leverage that. So that said, as I said, Adam is doing a great session tomorrow. I think it's 4:30?
2:45.
2:45? That's not too bad. We will be at the booth. There is actually hands on lap if you want to play with this. And we'll be at the Ask the Experts actually tonight. That said, it's like, please fill in your eval forms so you can let us know what you thought about this. If this was helpful, if this content actually meets your needs, we really want to hear. So that said, I want to thank you very much. And if you have questions, we're happy to answer them. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry, question. Yes. Great question. So the question is like, can we develop SQL CLR procedures? The answer is yes. So we actually allow multi-mode, so multi-language projects. So the same project that you saw, you can actually drop in a C# or a VB.NET file, and we will compile that into an assembly and deploy that for you and do the same things. You can also reference external assemblies if you want to build them in a separate project like you might be used to, or that's because it's a different developer, different skills. You can reference them as external project external files and add them too. So that's possible. The only caveat there is that you do need a Visual Studio Professional license or up, because the C# and VB.NET development environment is not in the integrated shell. The question is, like, do we check the versions of the .NET framework? The answer is yes, based on if you're in 2012, we make sure that you have 4.0. And if you're on the older versions, it's effectively 2.0. Yes, sir. So the question is, like, the continuous integration in hosted TFS, right, if we can use this. So right now, it's like it's TFS is still making his way into Azure. We're not there yet. We're actually working with them to make sure that the MS Build tasks are there, and so you can use them. So right now, if you have a TFS environment, or if you have a headless or a built environment, a built server, we actually provide you with two redists. There is one redist which just contains the runtime and the command line tool. So everything you saw Sarah do from the command line, there is one MSI, the DEC framework MSI that you need to install. It's actually excopiable if you would want to, but it's like we always install it in one directory. But if you want to host that inside an installer, for example, you could. That gives you the engine. And then there is a separate MSI for build tasks. And so what we allow you to do is install this whole environment, including the build and deployment environment, in a headless environment without Visual Studio even being there. So we're working with the TFS team to actually get this into a hosted environment. The challenge will be is like we're updating pretty frequently, so the engine also updates, and so making sure that that stays in sync is right now the challenge that we're working through. But it's on our radar and on our list to do. There was another question. Did it answer the question? Right. Sir. Great question. So the question is, I'll repeat it for the recording. So it's great that SSDT database projects are in sync between the two versions of Visual Studio. How about the other BI Studio projects, reporting services, analysis services, and integration services? So they will not ship in the box. They will be there before the end of the year. There is a hard commitment that we're actually going to do an online update and make those project systems available in Visual Studio 2012 before the end of the year. So that will happen. They're not as far ahead as we are with the database projects, but there is an executive commitment to actually make this happen. So, and it's recorded now. Any other questions? Yes. Okay, so the question is, like, when we showed the debugger, is like, is this actually the regular SQL Engine debugger, or is this something else? And the answer is, it's just the regular SQL debugger with all its limitations. Because that was the next question, right? Yeah. I know the question. So it's like there's a long list of outstanding questions, right, or requests with regards to show me the content of a table variable or temp variables, or if I go to a cursor, let me see that. It's like one step at a time. We're not able to get that addressed. So, yes? So the question is, like, how can I actually do a data transformation as part of my DAC-backed deployment? So today, there really, it's like, it depends on, most of the times the answer is it depends, all right, but it's like, depends on the kinds of change. If it's really an elaborate change which requires you to run custom code, right now it's like you would actually have to do this in a two-step process. So the way that we would do it is like you have to have create the first DAC back, which would make the first change, copy the changes out, and then follow it up with a second deployment, which actually pushes back. We don't allow you yet to insert or associate custom script with certain changes inside the pipeline. That's something that we're working on to make sure is like, how can we do this? Now, the interesting challenge we're facing, to be completely transparent with you, is like in a declarative system, right, it's like building in those kind of steps would almost defeat the declarative aspect. So we're trying to come up with an approach of how to marry these two things together to give you that flexibility, but we're not there yet. We understand the problem that everybody tries to solve. But we're trying to fit this in the right way into the ecosystem. Anybody else? Yes? Perfect question. Thank you. So the remark is like, it's right now, it's like it's a web downloadable tool. How does this work with the security requirements that large corporations have and will not allow me to simply download willy-nilly tools? So what you can do is like we offer today is like we're offering one option that is to create an admin installation. And that pulls everything down onto a share that you can then publish internally. So that allows you to make it available inside your corporation simply from a file share. We're also, is like we heard this request a couple of times, that people really would also like to have an ISO image that they can go to MSDN downloads, download the ISO image and mount that in their farm. That's one of the things that we're working on making that available. Those are the two solutions that we're currently thinking about. If that doesn't solve the problem, I would be happy to talk to you to see like what other solutions we can come up with. All right. Going once, twice. I want to thank you again very much and have a great decade.